Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio.
OCO.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
The next 45 minutes is a continuation of last night's program, followed by another interview with Chokosh Aho.
When not to take their food, or I just was going berserk. And they asked me to pull over the road I was driving, and they said, look, there are three things that you must remember. First of all, you ask permission. Oh, no, first of all, wake up. Be aware. Second of all, ask permission. And the third one is, then it's up to you. So he said, yes. Well, now it's up to you. And what that said to me is that they had found that I had asked permission. I was awake and aware. And now if I wanted to continue teaching and get shit, It was up to me. They weren't going to go there with neon signs and banners and saying, you know, leave Chokosha Ho'o alone. She's one of ours. She has permission. She's doing our work. You know, be nice to her. They weren't going to do that. But that, you know, they, because I've been aware and had asked permission and had this knowledge now, if I wanted to stick my neck out for whatever would happen, well, it was up to me. So this is what they said. Okay. All right, let's talk about the first one. Where do you live? What do you think about that one?
Well, I know where I live. I don't,
Let me give you a hint. It's more than geographical. Where do you live?
Well, you can live... You can, you know, do you live in your head or do you live in your heart? Prophecies say that at this time there'd be so many people that they really wouldn't know what to do. And they said a lot of people would finally figure it out, but it would be too late to do anything about it. And so that's why I've been doing what I've doing for these years. And Yeah. And, yeah, I was given, and I can look back now and I can see, well, I can see how I was raised. I was raised to be by articulate white people, and then turned back over to native people, which is part of my heritage. But I, you know, my dad was a professional engineer, and he prided himself. He said, "I can communicate with anybody." He said, "Whether it's the guy in the shop, you know, with the wrench, or the president of the company." And he told me, he says, "That's what you need to do. You need to be able to communicate with anybody. Don't be above anybody, or don't be below anybody." So that's. I can see I was prepared to do what I'm doing, but I just had such a sense of urgency because time is so short. So that's why you've been doing it for, 40 years, and, you know, I've been doing it basically for about 15 years, and when you close your eyes, I'll be doing it for a while, and hopefully someone will come up behind me, but time really is short.
We've got to do it now. That's it. Okay, here's one that you probably know. Are you in right relation?
Well, that's
what I understand that to be is being in right relation, living your life in right relation, is your relationship to everything, to nature, to your children, to, are you a consumer? Are you one of the people that buy a product which is essentially unsafe for the planet, and so giving it a market, encouraging then these different materials that are toxic to be, increased? Do you ever get out a bicycle or walk? Are you part of the problem or part of the solution? Are you in right relation? Are you living in balance? And then the one that follows that is the one that I'm still a little unsure of, whether they said who or what are your relationships. What are your relationships? And each one of these is like a cone, to be meditated on. And then it says, where is your water? Well, I took that, especially because this was prior to Y2K, where everything is run by computer chips, and things were, we were warned that it might all stop. And so if you go to turn on the faucet and no water comes out of your faucet, or your bathtub, what are you going to do? Do you know where your water is? Because that's going to be the first thing to be controlled, and also the first thing to be sabotaged and to go.
Absolutely.
So where is your water? When I was living in Topanga Canyon, there was a group that took the possibility of Y2K quite seriously. We thought, well, we don't know if it's going to happen or not, but what can we do to prepare? And what I did was try to find all of the old springs and the water sources before they had public water that came in. People had wells, and there were springs. Well, they're still all over the place. And then, I love this one, know your garden.
You know, it takes years to know a garden.
Yeah, well, I think they're talking about more than just what you've got in the fence line in your backyard, and more than just the domestic garden in your house. I think that it's this planet is a garden. It's the garden. One of the things that I do is I take people out and I teach them how to identify medicinal and edible plants, the wild native plants, and how to pick them in a sacred manner so that you're cultivating the wild, so you're encouraging growth rather than wiping out an area. and it's a beautiful experience. It's very conscious, and it's very easy to learn these things, and the wild things are still growing all around us. Well, anyway, they said, know your garden. And some of the most important medicinal and edible so-called weeds are growing in vacant lots and between the cracks and sidewalks and any place that hasn't been concreted over. Those wonderful green people just keep pushing themselves up for our benefit. So know your garden. So we've got, where do you live? What are you doing? Are you in right relation? What are your relationships? Where is your water? Know your garden. And then moved into, it is time to speak your truth. The Hopis told me that at the moment of birth, when the new being takes its first breath, when the baby takes its first breath, that's the beginning of its lifetime, and it ends with the last breath. So between those two breaths is your lifetime. Well, when that baby takes its first breath, the Hopis believe that at that moment of birth, the great mystery places in each and every one of us a sacred truth and a special strength, and that it's then up to us to define that truth, refine it, and give it back to the people. We used to have elders who, through their witnessing and observation, would help us. Now it's mostly up to us. But then here's the part that helps that part. It is time to create your community. It's critical. The elders say that the time of, oh, Uncle John said this as well, the time of the lone wolf is over. We must gather ourselves.
Absolutely. And you know, that's really hard. My family's involved with a group here in Missouri. And it's hard to come together as a small community because people are used to living all over the place and you know, making, you know, you meet together once a week, but it's mind-boggling to think, you know, what would happen if the electricity went off tomorrow, you know, and the thing that I've said to these folks is, well, you know, hey, everybody's on well systems, and you know, our wells are at least 100 feet deep. And I said the first problem we're going to have is pumping water. And
you can't rely on electricity.
No.
From the grid.
And so, you know, we've, you know, some of us are more affluent than others. And, you know, when you have a group of five or six families, and then you begin to think, well, you know, some of us have, you know, a wind charger or, you know, it's our generators or whatever would be needed to create alternating current, and at least we could pump water, you know, for several minutes a day, you know, if it's enough to just, you know, keep you alive. And it takes coming together as a community, especially food production, those kind of things. It's really mind-boggling. So I always tell people, well, you know, you talked about know your garden, and I tell people, well, when they ask me, well, what are we going to do about food? And I said, when I lived in Utah some years ago, I picked up a book that was called How to Survive a Famine. And the book had the outline of that Biafra child on the front of it. It was a black book and with a pink outline of this, pink silhouette of this child. And basically the book was full of, it was by region, and it explained what weeds in what regions are edible, so you didn't get a hold of something that would kill you. And they said that that any weed is edible and tastes really good, provided you have maybe some vegetable oil to cook it in. it'll keep you alive. And it said that, you know, even grass, you know, and it said people will starve to death in the future, and there'll be tons of food around for them to eat. They just won't know how.
That's right. We're here because our ancestors, before there were supermarkets, we got this far because our ancestors knew the foods and knew the medicines that just grew wild. And, you know, especially here in the United States, it's just a big breadbasket. Well, you know, it's more than just for a physical survival. Well, I guess it's all connected. If you are alone, there are so many lies that we are being given at this time, that if you don't have people to talk your thoughts over with, you'll feel like you're going crazy, because it seems like the whole rest of the world is all doing this one thing, and there's something inside of your being that's screaming, no, no, no. And so it's very important, number 7, when it says it's time to speak your truth. We really have to not hide ourselves, who we are, in order to get along, because then nobody will know who we really are. So at this time, it is critical to speak our truth. And then others like us can find us. We can be identified there.
That's right.
And then we'll feel stronger. If there's someone else that you can speak the unspeakable to, the thing that you were afraid to share, and they go, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I feel the same way. Then your whole being just takes this great breath, and you go, oh, all right, I'm all right. You know, and it gives you strength. The lone wolves, we are of an ilk, and we can all be lone wolves together. You know, we don't have to change our nature, but we do need to be around others like our soul, the colors of our soul, not our skin. And so it's time to speak your truth, and then it said from that, create your community. Maybe just people that you can celebrate with, that you can tell, and a community can be very small. And then number 9 is be good to each other. Now I have to share with you what happened to this Hopi elder's body when he said this one. Now he'd been very serious, his two hands out, but then when he said be good to each other, he kind of raised up on his heels, or on his toes a bit, and just kind of sparkled, and he said, be good to each other. And what I got from his energy, the way he said it, and the way his body just kind of became so concentrated, and it was so cute, frankly, I saw him sparkle, and he was like, be good to each other, create a community, and make it be the game, the art of being good to each other, you know, with intention, doing things that bring a smile to each other's eyes.
We'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Little surprises, little who knows what. You know, be creative with this. And in this group, and even sometimes with strangers, what can you do that is a gift of the moment, that is a connection in this very isolated culture we experience? Be good to each other.
You know, the one thing that I've found that our little group here, basically we're six families and there's some other families that are allied with us. But as we've gone through the process, I've noticed that the biggest struggle that each family had was that families tend to be like lone wolves themselves. And it's easy for a family to say, well, I'm going to share this with my kids, or I'm making plans for my kids to come, but on the other hand, you know, I look at them and tell them, you know, hey, your children are probably the last people that are going to come. Yes, we can hope and pray that they'll come, but the ones that are here now are getting ready are the ones that need each other the worst, and this has been the energy block, the dynamic that needs to be broken through. People need to recognize that you can be a lone wolf unto yourself, but you can also be lone wolves in your own family, because each family is a unit. So as you go through your dynamics in this next a year, and find your people and treat them like your family, or better than your family. You know, identify who it is that are going to be your allies, and treat them like family, because your own family may not come.
Yes, that's true, isn't it? You know, we need to find people that we can share our fears and our joys with, that you can talk about things, you know, discuss what we're being fed in the newspapers, through the media, what's going on, and to share our dark place with, and people that know how to treat each other with honor and respect. Have you ever read or made available to them the Hopi 10?
Oh yes, the Hopi 10 have been in my encyclopedia with attribution to you for quite some time now. They've been up on the websites about a year and a half, something like that.
Is this group of six families?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely, yeah.
Well, that kind of depersonalizes it. That's another thing that Uncle John said, God bless him. I hope he tries to get in touch with me. I have no idea where he is. I think I'm making him famous.
How old was he when you knew him in the 70s?
Oh, I actually met him in the 80s. That would have been around 83, 84.
20 years ago. How old was he then?
Well, of course, now that I'm in my 60s and I feel like a kid, he seems so old to me. I can't really tell people's ages anymore. But
you think he might have been in his 70s?
60s, 70s, yeah.
Yeah, if it was John Fadden, I think he's walked west.
Nice looking man.
Yeah, John, I believe it was, I don't know. It's just hard to know who that was.
The only thing I know about him is that at the time he was living in the Kern River, eastern part of Mid-California. But anyway, here's another goodie that he said. I'm sure that I was struggling with something and shared it with him, and he said to me, he narrative that you tell your people, Chukotka, that you tell the people that at this time in the world's history, they are not to take anything personally, least of all of themselves. Because the moment that you do, your spiritual growth and journey comes to a screeching halt.
Not to take yourself seriously?
Personally.
Oh, personally.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And we're all here right now to do a job. Don't personalize it. Don't get into a big thing of it. Just take care of business.
Oh, the philosophy of my teacher, John Red Hat. John was adopted into Chief Mike's, Chief of Arrivee's family. Chief Mike was John Lampus' brother. And John's attitude was, hey, you know, it's just a job. You know, being an elder is just a job. It's nothing special. You know, everybody's got their functions. And he says, it's just something you got to do. And he says, don't let it go to your head. And he says, run. He says, if you get around somebody that thinks they're somebody, he says, run from them. You know, and I've always thought that way, you know.
I remember Raymond Stone, the Paiute elder, that wonderful man. And people, you know, started to put him up on a big pedestal and idolize him. And he was written about in several books. And they were starting to make a big to-do about him. And he would love to just turn around, look up straight in the eye and say, I'm just an old fart doing his job.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've heard others say, you know, just watch the movie and take care of your business. By the way, that suddenly reminds me of something that my Shumash elder grandfather, Victor Lopez, said. He said, you know, when it comes, and I want to say this to the people, I know in the 60s, 70s, 80s, a lot of folks who didn't look very much like an American Indian were wearing headbands and beads and feathers and all that stuff, or, you know, non-Indian people in the sweat lodges. Of course, if your family's been in the United States very long, you probably got some Indian blood in there anyway, but it's just a matter of spirit. You know, where do you live? Not blood or color. And you know, I would ask him when I would see all the discord and people, you know, wanting to know, well, what's your percentage of your Indian, or what are you doing in here? You've got blue eyes, or I would just hear people being treated very badly like that. And so I asked him about that, and he said to me, when it comes to your spirit way, he said, what you must do is do whatever you do with honor and respect. And if you do that, then it's between you and your creator, and it isn't anybody else's business.
Honor. Honor is, people want to basically understand respect. But honor is another thing. I know when my first wife, after she passed away and I remarried, within 6 months she came back, and I see her quite often. Whenever something's going to happen that might shake me up, she's always will always let me know something's going to happen. Anyway, she showed up and told Betty something. And she says, if you don't raise Joseph, that was her son and my son. And she says, if you don't raise Joseph with honor, he'll be taken away from you and given to somebody else. And don't you think that didn't shake us up? Well, you know, honor, you know, you can't look that up in the encyclopedia. There's a little bit of a picture of what it is in the dictionary. But you have to go to organizations like the, you know, Wyandotte Guides or the Boy Scouts and those kind of people. They're the only ones that really deal in those kind of terms, you know. And The biggest problem I see, there's a lot of people running around that have big holes in their hearts, and they grab a hold of native culture, but even for whatever reason, they've got some native blood or they become enamored with it, and before they internalize it, they just say, "Oh, well, I'm an Indian," and then they don't change their ways. They still think like the old person, so it's the same kind of process, I guess, that any spiritual organization asks you to go through, and that is, you know, people need to learn what honor really is, and not deny those things which are honest and truthful, and embrace them. It's just, you know, we live in a culture that's that just doesn't teach those values very readily, which is really a shame.
Yeah, I agree with you on a level, and sometimes that really used to turn me off, you know, but then after my elder, and it was that kind of angst that I had, like many other Native people around that, you know, the kind of annoying, posturing. And so that's when I asked Victor Lopez, one of the most loving people and wisest that I've ever, his wisdom came from love. And there wasn't a whole lot of that going around in the Indian community at the time. Everybody was trying to figure out how to be Indian, you know, because there had been such a breaking of the lineage. And we did talk further about it, and I said the same thing that you said about these people who come in posturing and without changing their lot, you know, their ways. But, you know, he said, well, think of this. They could have been drawn something in their soul through them to what is the wisdom of the earth people's knowledge here. And he said, so maybe they're just jumping around, making a lot of noise and wearing feathers and beads. But who knows? Everyone enters this at their own pace and their own level. And maybe by doing this, so he comes or she comes to a Sundance or a Sweat Lodge or a powwow, and they wear all these things, but then they're brought into this. They're exposed to it, and maybe through time, though they entered in a superficial way, it speaks to them and they begin to grow up.
That's right.
Well, and he said, besides, it's not our business anyway. They do what they do with honor and respect. The CEO, Creator, will take care of them.
That's right. And people need, my wife has a direct female lineage back to her clan. She's one of the few Cherokees that knows what clan she comes from. But one of her her famous sayings is, "Hey, you have two holes to listen with, and one to make noise with." So, Creator obviously wanted us to listen twice as much as to talk. That's good advice.
Yes, it is. And I remember something that Twilineage Seneca elder said to me, you know, when you're pointing your finger at somebody else, look at you, do that with your hand. And so I did that.
You got three pointing back at you.
Exactly. Those are great. You know, that's really wonderful. And there you are. It's the truth.
Well, let's see. Have you covered the 10 yet, or were you on 9?
No, we did. Oh, that's right. Okay, be good to each other. Oh, we did 9. Be good to each other, he said. And 10. And do not look outside yourself for the leader.
Absolutely. You know, and you know what? This is what I've talked about. This is what Red Elk talks about. You know, and this is what people really laugh at us for talking about, you know, is that, and it's a completely foreign concept to a lot of people, that we don't we should not even look at beyond ourselves for, well, one of my favorite stories is and I talk a lot about the Bible and everything because I was brought up in that tradition, and I use those teachings from the Bible to try to point out some of the realities rather than what people believe is the dogma. And I said, you know, when Moses went up the mountain, I said, all the people were invited to go up. And they said, no, Moses, you go on up. And the first time he came down, you know, he came down with a set of laws, and, you know, he saw that, you know, the people were not going to be able to live those laws, and he broke those laws, and he went back up and got another law, and those laws that those people have been living for these, you know, many thousands of years, a very difficult law, and but if they had gone up the mountain with him the first time, we never would have had the priests between us. We never would have needed anyone between us and our Creator. Right, you know, and you know, Jesus said, my sheep know my voice. And, you know, he also said, if you come to me, and if I never knew you, I'm going to say I never knew you. So now is the time to establish a direct relationship with whatever your concept of your God is, because if you talk rather than talking at it, if you talk with it, they will, your Creator will begin to establish a contact with you and will help protect you. And I, you know, when people ask me, well, should we move out of the cities and how close is it getting? And I say, hey, don't worry about it. The thing you need to worry about is, are you going to be fearful when this happens? Because I said, if you have the voice of the Creator and access to it, you're never going to worry about anything. Because you're going to know for a certainty that before it happens, you're going to know what's going to happen. And, you know, so I look at my Christian friends and say, hey, you remember when the two people were going around the camp of Israel and the people went to Moses complaining, and Moses kind of said, well, so what? You know, he says, I would that everyone could be a prophet. So this is the natural order of things is to be your own prophet, to be your own priest, and to be your own king. And I think that's what we're finally coming around to as we get ready to go with Mother Earth into these changes. And it could be easy or it can be hard, depending on how we react to it.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Blueauer speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Absolutely. I guess I wanted to kind of maybe close this evening with two things. One is that I think that where religions went wrong is they got fixated on the messenger. And because what instead of the source and the truth and the message that the messenger was carrying, they made a cult around the messenger instead instead of keeping their eyes on the sun or their focus on the source, the creator, in whatever language you want to say, you know, that is all around and is in everything. And so by fixating on the messengers, instead of fixating on the message, that created all these divisions, and my messenger's better than your messenger, and it's just terribly sad because nobody's paying attention to what they said, and they did. They created a cult around the messenger. But about this death business, in 1988, from 1985 to 88, there were a couple of attempts on my life because I was considered one of the leaders of the protest against the canonization of Umbra Sera. And apparently one of the attempts, or two of them, I believe, I wasn't even aware of until afterwards. But this one, on January the 17th at 6 o'clock in the morning, 1988, I guess, my friend Anna Mary Brown was driving me through the rain from Pacific Grove, California, to San Francisco at the Unitarian Church in Franklin and Erie. And it was a colloquium of mainstream ministers, like Episcopalian, Lutheran, Methodist, Protestant, those groups, Unitarian. I'm not sure if Unity was involved, but those ministers coming from all over the United States to talk about spirituality and the environmental ethic. And I was asked to do the opening talk. Well, we never made it because about 20 minutes from home, driving on pretty much a deserted 101 highway, the rain wasn't that bad, and all of a sudden we were struck by a vehicle from behind us, struck so hard it turned our car into what seemed like an accordion fleet. And my friend who was driving was killed instantly. And when we were found by the Aromas Fire Department rescue crew, they had checked both of our vital signs and neither one of us were showing anything. So as far as they were concerned, I was also dead. But let me tell you what my experience was. One minute, I was looking at her hands, and then I guess we were struck. I don't remember the crash at all. I had been told just a week before by someone, and they said to me, you know, when you die, like if it's an accident or something horrific, like an explosion or so forth, your soul leaves your body just before it happens. And I went, oh, okay, and kind of forgot about it. Well, this is what I experienced. One minute, I turned around and looked at her hair, and then without skipping a beat, the next thing I knew, we were having a conversation out of the car, walking down the highway 101, walking south. And I looked, and I was caught, you know, it's dark in January at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's pitch dark. But I noticed that the shrubs that were on either side of the highway seemed to have kind of like an amber glow around them. And that I was trying to keep up with her. She seemed to be very determined. She knew exactly where she was going. And I was just trying to keep up with her because I remember remarking to myself, this is the most interesting conversation I have ever had with anybody in my whole life. And so I kept, you know, keeping up with her going south through the darkness. And then a light came off to my right, and with it a buzzing sound, and then I pushed it away happened three times, and each time the buzzing sound and the light became stronger. And on the third time, I saw that I was like in two different worlds. There was my friend as I watched her walking away in the distance going south, and then there was me trying to deal with this buzzing sound and this light. And pretty soon, the buzzing sound and the light became more real, and she kind of faded off into the distance. And the buzzing sound, eventually I was able to make out that they were words, and the light was a flashlight. There's no light at the end of the tunnel here. And they were brushing, calling my name. It turned out that the rescue worker, Pete McCusick, the one that was there in the car with me and trying to, brush the glass off me and so forth, had been himself in a sweat lodge the night before, and the people there had been asked to pray for me on my behalf. So he knew who I was. And then as I came out of it, I realized that my friend had slumped over and was lying across my lap, and her head was facing towards the dashboard, and I had my right hand under her right cheek, and my left hand was on top of her head, like just cradling her head between my hands. And they told me later on that they had not, in quite a while, that they had not been able to find any vital signs on me, and that my friend had been killed instantly. Her heart had ruptured. It had literally exploded by the impact behind it. What I experienced, and is as real today as this moment that I'm speaking to you, is that there, Uncle John again.
Good place to let folks think about what they've heard tonight. We sure appreciate you being on Prophecy Keepers as our guest tonight. And
well, it is such a great pleasure. It makes my blood pump. It's where I live. In sharing these things, it's just it's where I live.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files, and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America, and this is our interview for the 1st of October, 2005. Our guest elder is Chakosh Alho, and she is a Chumash elder, and I'm speaking to her in California. And how are you, Auntie?
Oh, I'm doing well, getting over a bit of a cold, trying to keep my wits straight in these strange times.
Well, I understand you want to say an opening prayer. Go ahead and say that now, if you would.
Well, I figure it's always a good idea. I'm not feeling particularly inspired tonight, but maybe Spirit will use me. Oh, great mystery. I'm calling out to you in a sacred manner. With honor and respect, we come here making ourselves vessels for thy will, thy beauty, thy love, thy truth. May we be as hollow reed from which the pith of self is removed, so that your wisdom, the touch of your being, your breath, may flow through me to others, and may this journey be blessed. Oh, great mystery. Look at the times that we're in. On the one hand, all I could think of when I went into my prayers to see how I could be used during this phone call, I just feel the great schism between what is this spirit world and what is this political reality, you know, and how much of a reality is it? It seems pretty brutal. And all I kept hearing is, on the one hand, the Taoists say that the enemy had a weapon, and it proved to be the greatest weapon of all, and that was the ability to astound. No one could believe how ruthless they were until it was too late. And then on the other side, I hear what the Guatemalan people say. They say the elders, for all their gifts that they have given us, all the beauty, the music, the dance, the food, each other's eyes, arms to hold each other, the mountains, the volcanoes, the sky, the ocean, and all of its peoples. And for all these gifts, the gods ask but two things of us: to be beautiful and grateful. So what do you think of that? On the one hand, this astounding enemy, their ability to astonish, it's so hard for us to believe how ruthless they really are. And on the other hand, in the meantime, we are asked to be beautiful and grateful.
Oh, well, that was an excellent prayer. Thank you, Auntie. So how has life been for you this last year or so? You've been all over the map and everywhere and nowhere.
Yes, it's been very good. I'm in a state of grace and gratitude these days. I'm feeling very fortunate on my own personal life, and then paying attention to what's going on the other side, and wondering what to make of it, and like everyone else, what do we do with this?
Yeah.
So I'm just living somewhere between the Taoist saying the enemy had a great weapon. It was in fact the greatest weapon of all, and that was the ability to astound. No one could believe how ruthless they were until it was too late.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it, from Guatemala, Martin Pertel in his book spoke that the Mayan gods ask but two things of us: for all the gifts they have given us, all the wealth and beauty that they share with us, they ask us to be beautiful and grateful. So I'm somewhere living between those two realities.
Yeah, that's a trick.
Yeah, keeping your eye on what's going on and being grateful for what I have, which is a great deal. In the midst of the ugliness is something exquisite. That's what a core truth. Of something wonderful, something that's in the river that we need to let ourselves go and join others and keep our eyes open, our head above water, and celebrate the beauty that's here.
Well, you've, I guess you've been to Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And have done some other events with some of the elders that you were telling me about the other night. What have you been up to?
Well, I've been doing a lot of storytelling and combining it with musicians who come along. We never rehearse. We just burn sage and ask spirit to write us. And these are the stories, the ancient tales of creation, migration, and prophecy, many of which I shared with you before. Mm-hmm. And on the last interview. And so, you know, it's just, you know, it's got me befuddled, and it's only in my prayers that I can find some peace, and yet it's not time for us to sedate ourselves or be distracted either. So they've got, the elders are doing well, you know, it's beautiful, and they keep carving up the land over there.
Yeah.
While I was there on the main, on Oahu, there were 300 Striker tanks delivered, airlifted onto the island, the little island of Oahu, and these things cost $2 million apiece. And they're being, hundreds of them are being delivered to the islands all over, to Kauai, the Big Island. I'm not sure if they're slated for Maui, but probably. And these are, you know, domestic weapons.
Mm.
So, I'm just kind of watching the noose being pulled tighter. And I feel strongly that there is a core principle, a strong medicine that is at work. You know, I think we're all looking for someone who knows. Someone who will lead, and yet the elders say, the Hopi said, do not look outside yourself for the leader. I keep going over the Hopi 10 now that the Y2K thing passed. I thought maybe that's what they were talking about. But, you know, it's huge. Have you had people call you and ask you about the Hopi 10?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Multi-dimensional.
We talk about it on our Native Prophecy Council mailing list on Yahoo groups quite a bit.
Uh-huh. What has the discussion been like with that?
Oh, just how to prepare for what might be coming, you know, what to do and in what order.
Yeah, we need to be minding our business right now, and it's important to speak our truth. That's critical, and also by way of doing that, be able to find each other and create our communities. It's remarkable what they've done with our tax dollar, collecting it as they do and then using it against us. I am very suspicious as I hear more and more about the tsunamis and the hurricanes and the ability of some rather astonishing minds who would be able to control that or set it off. Or from what I understand with this last hurricane, that there were some very strange things observed about it as it was building. And I have heard on a few other programs that they may not have the ability to whip one of those hurricanes up, but that they may be capable of directing it once it happens.
All you gotta do is heat the water.
What?
All you have to do is heat the water underneath it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, in the meantime, I'm trying to be beautiful, and I'm definitely having times of extraordinary moments of gratitude. In the midst of it all, there is, as I said, that's all that I can say to you and to the people out there, is there is a still, quiet place within where one can contact the Amakua, your ancestor spirits and the high self, and that we need to get as clear as possible and find that core place and be present, very present, because I feel there may be something wonderful coming, that this is all something in motion and in process.
And by the way, folks, if you want to take a look at Grandmother Chakosha's website, it's at blanketofhope.com. What is it? Com order. Blankofhope.com, isn't it?
Could be .org.
Okay.
Blanket
oh, there's a
of Hope.
There's a link on
the blanketofhope.org.
Yeah, there's a link on the page that people are listening to the interview. It'll say guest website.
I haven't done too much with that website, and I'd like to get all of the stories from the elders and all the one-liners. They're so helpful for these times, and just get that put up. You know, if someone would like to assist me in doing that, I can't be everywhere at once. And part of the Hopi prophecy was that at the 11th hour, we would have two technologies. One, definitely out of balance, would be a technology of destruction, and that it would present itself as a gourd of ashes in the sky, and that if it were released, it would boil the oceans and end all life as we know it. But they said that there would be an alternative technology that would be the other choice, and that would be the technology of communication, and that seen from outer space, looking back at the earth with spirit's eye, it would be like a shimmering spider's web surrounding and embracing the earth and enabling the people who were scattered to the four directions to be able to communicate and mend the sacred hoop. This is actually a petroglyph carved into a great rock on Third Mesa between Oraibi and Kakotsmovi. And Thomas Banyakya took me up there, many years ago, almost 40 years ago now. And there it was, carbon dated about 1,200 years ago.
Wow.
And knew about the World Wide Web. So we need to be communicating with each other, but using this instrument in a sacred manner, not all this garbage that they seem to be flooding us with. You got to stay straight and clear, your eye on the core truth.
Yep. I guess there's good and bad and everything.
Yeah. It isn't what happens to you, but how you use it. I love what Uncle John, the Iroquois elder, said about the time of the lone wolf is over. We must gather ourselves. Seems to me that unifying at this time is very, very important, and to act from a sacred place.
Well, it's difficult because everybody's been so used to finding reasons to get away from other people. It's awful hard to find reasons to get together with other folks.
Well, I did a meditation while I was waiting for you to call me, and what I got was that we must not allow ourselves to be disunified. You know, we must not allow any kinds of religious or economic or racial or any of these nonsense judgment places to come between us. We're all sacred people, and at this time, especially here on Turtle Island, where you have the Asian, African, Middle Eastern, Anglo, Native, Polynesian, all these different beautiful colors and cultures. This is such a rich soup, and in division we will fall. And in coming together and seeing the sacred and refusing to treat each other with anything less, they're going to be working on us in the coming days very hard to divide and conquer, to distract us with all kinds of stuff. It's important to realize that it is just stuff. No. May I offer a tool from the elders for moments like these?
Yes, please.
Okay. There is something called, well, I don't know if the elders called it this, but it's how I label it, and it's called finding the center of your seat of power.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
In this life, in this level of reality that we are living, we are distracted, we are fragmented, we get so overwhelmed with the avalanche of stuff. And it's in this moment when you realize you're being pushed here and pulled there and you're out of balance, and my God, like when we open our computers, it's our emails, there's all this stuff you have to wade through. Well, there's a very easy way to take care of that psychically, spiritually. All that stuff is in our minds. It's all coming in from every angle. And so what you see yourself doing is standing and drawing a circle around yourself and leave a little space open. Then you call in the whirlwind, our little cyclone, and you call it in, and it comes in like a vacuum cleaner, and it goes, and it sucks up all the stuff that's inside of that circle, and all the stuff that's on you, and it goes, and it sucks up all the stuff. Now the elders say you need to realize what stuff is. Well, stuff is everything, except for the fact that you are a part of the great, divine, inexplicable miracle of this existence, that you are a cell in the body of God's Spirit. So this cyclone comes in and it goes, you can feel it, sometimes it gives me goosebumps, and it goes, sucks up all the stuff, the good stuff, the bad stuff, it's all just stuff. Everything but the fact that you're part of divine being is stuff, and it sucks it up off of you and out of inside of the circle, and then you send it out of your circle and seal the circle. Close it so it's complete. Now straighten up tall and feel yourself moving around until you feel the exact center of that circle. You will always find it. It's there. And it goes up. And as your feet slip into that place of being in the cleaned out center of your circle, you are now standing in the center of your seat of power, and you will feel it.
Oh, sounds like a good technique.
Yeah, well, it works, you know, it works. That's why I call these things the 11th hour tools for spiritual warriors who are in a hurry. And then there's the big guns. You want to know about the big guns?
Yeah, okay.
This is a protection against psychic drain and physical danger. And it's good to practice it in situations where you know that you usually go where it just feels like you're getting attacked or drained or sometimes when you need physical protection. But I would start in a not too malevolent situation for starters, but practice is what makes you be able to own this tool. My teacher told me you see yourself inside of an ice blue egg. Well, I won't argue with whatever color, you know, you use. But what he said was an ice blue egg. And I'll tell you, I've stopped fists from coming at me. I've been able to hold meetings, very successful meetings with people who just absolutely drained me. Mm. Or I would feel very self-conscious or are not in my power around. But this ice blue egg, it seems to neutralize the space between you and whatever it is that you need protection from. And I've been able to have pretty good relations with keeping things clear. It just neutralizes all the stuff.
Fascinating.
We're dealing with a lot of stuff in this life right now. But we need to recognize it as stuff. And tools are helpful.
What about, do you think physical preparations are as important as spiritual preparations, or how would you sort that out?
Well, we've got a physical body and we've got a spiritual body. I think they go hand in hand. I think one assists the other, and I think that while we're trying to figure this thing out, I think that the most important of the two is the spiritual. You need to be able to keep your head and your heart clear and strong. But I think that both may be a good idea. I think they're partners, just like, as I said, our physical and our spiritual bodies. We've been given both for a reason. And I don't think that, I definitely would not start putting away water and food and all that stuff and not attend to my spiritual garden, because you where your head and your heart is the most important thing. And if push comes to shove, once you've got that in order, then it's good to know where are you living, what are you doing, what are your relationships, are you in right relations, and it's time to, did I say where is your water?
Mm-hmm.
Know your garden. It's time to speak your truth. Create your communities. Be good to each other. And do not look outside yourself for the leader. And then I keep seeing, thank goodness, this elder, Hopi elder, leaned forward and his eyes sparkled, and he brought his hands together and said, "And this could be a good time."
Mm.
So I think there's a lot in there. It's like an Indian Native American cone. Things to think about, things to be responsible to. And we must not distract ourselves. I feel as though, and I have been told, that all the people who are on the planet at this time knew exactly what they were coming for. And so it's time to hone those tools and be really decent human beings and pay attention. Oh, here's something else that the Hopis told me back around 1966. We're going, I'm in my little car with Grandfather David Menangi, Thomas Manyakya, and the Araibi chief's husband, an amazing man named John Langsa. And I'm so concerned about my behavior and if I'm doing the right thing. Is they're taking me to Walpi and Shingobavi and Shampalavi and all these different villages to meet the people. And they just told me to pull over by the side of the road, stop the car, turn off the key. And he said, "Now look, there are three things for you to remember. First one is to wake up and be aware. Be aware." And then he says, "Then ask permission. And then it is up to you." So however those words might apply to other people's lives, they need to think about that. What does that mean to you?
Most of us are just kind of unconscious all the time.
Yeah, well, they want us to be that way, you know, like squirrels in a cage and on that little wheel and just trying to pay the rent and look out for our children and, you know, the next payment on whatever. And that's all stuff. That's stuff, you know, it needs to be taken care of. It's nice to have a roof that doesn't leak. But no matter what you put away for yourself in the physical realm, if you haven't found your balanced place in the spirit place, you're going to squander your actions.
Yep.
Does that make sense to you?
Sure does. Sure does. I know we've ever since all. I guess the early 80s, when I really kind of became aware of what might happen, we've always kind of looked at life pretty basically and really have tried as much as we can to be mobile and still kind of have enough preparations around us that we could have as much control over utility dislocations and, mm-hmm. you know, not being able to buy different things and having a little food on hand and trying to do as much as we can, you know, toward eating things that aren't processed and, you know, which that takes, you know, that involves tools and food storage and other preparations
you don't want to fixate on that sort of stuff, but it behooves us to
keep it simple.
You know, to be responsible.
Yeah, it's just keeping things simple. You know, canning and gardening.
Right.
We've had a great garden this year. We're gonna have a better one next year. It's well, I know our pepper plants are what we did this year. I haven't even told you about that. We bought, oh, I guess about 26 gallon garbage cans and filled them up with Miracle-Gro potting soil. And we've got everything plumbed with drip irrigation, and everything is, you know, It's on a clock system where it gets.
Oh, why?
You know, it gets.
So you're doing container gardening.
Yeah, yeah, and we bought. About 20 or so garbage cans. We also had 20 or so of about 25 gallons storage bins, like the mermaid ones, and where we cut the flat part of the lids off and put maybe 100 holes in each one, and underneath them suspended 5 1-quart painter's mixing buckets, drilled holes in those, put them in the bottom of the bottom of the bins, made a pipe so the water could get down to the bottom. Then you put the dirt on top of that, so there's always water available to the roots, and the plants can water and feed whenever they want to, and don't have to depend on you for water. It's wicked up.
I ask you why you chose to do container gardening rather than to set it right directly into the earth?
Well, we live in a mobile home.
Oh.
And the Ozarks here, you only have to dig about 1/4 inch, you're going to hit about 4 rocks.
Oh, that's a good reason.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good reason.
And we chose the, garbage cans we chose because, like the tomato plants and things like that are really deep rooting, pepper plants and other stuff like that we put in there. And the other, like, row crops and everything we put in the containers. And just kind of did some experimenting this year. And
oh, that must feel so good. I
remember
in a place that I had in Southern California, the soil was pretty much clay packed, and we also had an underground city of gophers.
Mm.
And so after some planting that didn't go very well, I just started digging holes in the ground, and then I dropped my buckets into the ground and then did the container gardening.
Mm.
And people didn't realize when they'd come and they'd say, wow, how'd you ever get them to grow? This looks so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then finally they would see that they were all in containers in the ground, which kept the gophers out. Mm-hmm. They ate more than their share.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I watched a sunflower being sucked down into the ground.
Well, we've grown all kinds of different lettuces and chard and strawberries. We're still eating strawberries, onions, cucumbers. Had a volunteer eggplant, okra, watermelon, just all kinds of stuff. We went through 85. 40-pound stacks of potting mix.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is so great. And it's more than just making food for yourself. There is a whole psychology and spiritual parenting that happens with caring for these miracle plants, you know, and what planting the seed and pulling the weeds and watching them grow and taking care of them.
Betty bought a little dwarf banana plant. It's about 3 feet tall. Last couple of nights it's been getting kind of cool, so we brought it in and had a little 3-inch long praying mantis. Took up residence on it. And that's okay. Little praying mantis to taking up residence on itself. So he's in the house now. We got to figure out how to feed him through the winter. Shouldn't be too hard.
Who knows? Maybe it's an ancestor and it'll speak wisdoms to you.
Maybe it's something that ate us in the past or will in the future. Beautiful guy. We call him Mr. Magoo.
Oh, that's great.
Little googly eyes, you know.
You know, when you start growing some things, it just opens up your senses to another whole world. We need to involve ourselves in the miracles inherent in this life.
It's been a lot of
focus
fun.
On that, because it still continues. It's still there.
And, you know, if we...
Good to be a gardener.
If we move this mobile home someplace, you know, the garden can all be put on a, you know, a 20-foot car trailer. Just put all the containers up on there and move them.
Oh, I love
set
that.
Set them someplace else. And, you know, potting soil is expensive. You're talking about 80 times, you know, 750. And,
yeah.
And then we're going to add,
expensive.
You know, next, you know, there'll be more. You know, next, you know, we were able to do as much as we could afford, and garden will get bigger next year.
Yeah, and then you can also start mixing it when you don't have to dump this potting soil next season, but you can mix it with composting that you find and the fall leaves and the humus that, you know, is in the ground and that you find in different spots, so it can be mixed. And
yeah.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Blueauer speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And expand it a bit.
Yeah, some friends.
But boy, it's sure worth it, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah. I have some friends that keep goats, and I tell you, that soil that had goat to manure in it and has aged for a couple of years, that's just unbelievable stuff. Sweet potatoes we've grown also, and just all kinds of stuff. You know, Betty goes out every day and brings out. The only thing is we don't have a... We don't have a lawnmower, kind of depend on the landlord. Here we're in a little mobile home park. There's about 16 trailers here. We're the only, sort of, it's just an old rundown place, and we're the only mobile home in here that's inhabited. And there's just, the grass gets high, and so we gotta figure out we just didn't have the money to get the inclination to get a, you really need when you get to be our age, you know, really need to get a riding lawnmower, so
yeah.
That's what everybody around here in Missouri's got one. So,
or rent an ad for someone who's got some goats that would like to come and graze.
Yeah, well, we're in the city, and we don't own the place, so landlord
wants
something like that. But he's got one, but it keeps breaking down. He'll you know, spend $100 on one, and he'll run for, you know, a half a day, and then quit, and he wonders. he's just a poor guy. So.
Oh, I thought you may be talking about a goat that kept breaking down.
It's a riding lawnmower. And, yeah, folks around here just don't have much money. And
well, that's how it's getting for the people of Turtle Island generally. And they're
going
to need to open up their eyes instead of resisting their economic situations. Do a wabi-sabi, what the Japanese call elegance in poverty. There are ways to be so creative and ways to really live elegantly and eloquently, and have what you need on a really a high level. I'm finding that whatever my income has been, that my struggle was more a mental one than it was really a physical one.
Oh yeah.
When all was said and done.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Struggling anymore.
Gotta do that. I mean, you know, witness what happened in New Orleans. I mean, us poor people down there, you know.
Oh.
But they just kind of, I just kind of feel like most of those people, and I grew up in Louisiana, Mississippi, around poor blacks, and, you know, most of them, a lot of them just gave up generations ago. They gave up any hope.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are very bitter. Some of them are not, you know, some of them are eternally, it's really individual. You know, the ones that are the bitterest are the ones that get involved in crime, and some of them are the most spiritual, some of them are the biggest spiritual warriors you ever want to meet in your life. It's just,
that's right, and look what an incredible culture was created out of that soup.
Oh, yeah.
In that area. It's just remarkable. Well, you know, I heard a story. Maybe I read it. It's about this elder, this grandfather, and he's sitting and having a talk with his grandson, and the grandson is wanting to know more about life and feeling bad because sometimes the grandson can get very angry and gets into fights with the other kids and just, you know, just gets into his anger. And the grandfather is saying, well, you know, it's like with me, son. Inside of me, they're like two wolves at war with each other. One wolf gets bitter and angry and vengeful. One wolf inside of me wishes that I had more and that I was treated better and wants to sometimes just take what I want. And then there is the other wolf that sees that all people struggle. All people can be confused or afraid. There is the other wolf that knows that even in my poverty, I can find a gift or make something that will bring smiles to someone's eyes, and I can extend my hand and help someone, even though I don't have much for myself. But then there is the other wolf, and they are at war with each other. And the little boy says, well, which one will win, Grandfather? And the old man looks at him, and he says, the one I choose to feed.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Well, that's what's going on. That's what's going on. And as you know, there was a time where I was in a terrible car crash, which killed my friend who was driving. And that when the rescue workers came, they wrote on this piece of paper that we were both dead. They saw no vital signs. So on one level, I died, not only there at the scene of the car crash, but 2 days later when the breathing apparatus was removed and I awoke to find myself not able to breathe, and that this time I knew I was dying. And what I know from this and what I can share with other people is what, again, Uncle John, the Iroquois elder, said to me just a week before this car crash happened. He said, you know, there is no such thing as death. There is no such thing in this universe, this reality. There is no such thing as death. There is only life, life in this body and life without it. And then he also said, and it's important that you know that in these really violent deaths, that the soul will always leave the body just before it happens. And then a week later, I died. And I know this is not a belief or a desire to believe, But from my experience, I know that one minute you can be in your body, and the next minute you've let go of it, and the difference is imperceptible.
Mm-hmm.
And why I think we need someone who comes from the other side to help us across in our consciousness, because I still felt like me, I still felt my personality, I could still feel my body. I didn't have a clue, and not for a moment did my consciousness, was there nothing. One moment I was in the car with my friend, and the next minute my experience was we were walking down the highway together, having the most interesting conversation I'd ever had. And then when they started bringing me back, at first the noise and the light seemed like a dream that was trying to intrude on my reality of walking down the highway with my friend. And then that the second reality became more real, and then I saw her go off without me. But that we mustn't allow a fear of death to interfere or to complicate our walking a true path.
I don't think anybody,
and when we're on it, we know we're there.
I don't think anybody's really afraid of dying. I think they're just afraid of the pain. You know?
Uh-huh.
I think you're kind of nuts to not want to, you know, change worlds. I think it's just the unknown. You know,
I'm trying to stay open as we speak, and we're sort of exploring this unknown territory of this public conversation, dialogue that we're having with each other, and to see what comes up. And this seems to be an important thing. Grandfather Victor Lopez Gallego said, "Don't cry and call out for the elders who have gone on, and be afraid that we won't be here for you." He said, it is important that you understand at this time the veil of illusion between this life and those that have gone on to the next, this consciousness and the greater, higher consciousness that is never ending and always present, the veil is at its thinnest. And we, the elders who have gone on, want to help all those who ask, and all those who wish to be of service. We want you people to succeed. And there is a way that you can contact us. And then he told me, at night, he said, eat lightly, fast if you can, or just eat very lightly, very mild food, so that your body isn't all taken up with trying to digest the last meal. And he said, adjust yourself in your bed so that you can lie perfectly flat with your spine straight. And he said, take a pillow and slip it under your left elbow so that you can rest your left hand over your heart, and that it's supported so it won't slip down. And then take your right hand and lay it at your side. Find a comfortable angle with the palm open. Left hand resting on your heart. Right hand open. And he said, and then just breathe us in. Do whatever ritual is necessary for you to feel that you are only opening and availing yourself to high spirit, clear spirit. And he said, and we will come. And we'll guide you. And we may use you. And should there come a point where you wish to break that link, you know, he said, just roll over on your side. Just, break the position. And I did that for years. I'm wanting to start that again soon because I'm feeling a great desire for guidance these days. And I'm, you know, what are we here for if not to serve and make life a little easier for each other? And if the elders are that close and that the simple positioning of our body and our intention can open us to them.
I was going to say, I think intention is really important because what little I know about Cherokee medicine is that Cherokee medicine people create their own. And they take what they know with them when they leave, and but they develop their own. And I think everybody just kind of, it's kind of a free-form intention, you know, just little rituals that they create for certain reasons. And I know I've read that Grandfather Mad Bear, he knew when the elders on the other side wanted to contact him because, you know, there'd be a knock on a window or a door.
Uh-huh.
So he'd, and every once in a while I'll get that too. I'll be laying in bed and kind of half awake, half asleep, and I'll hear this bam, 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 you know, and I've heard this in trucks in the middle of nowhere where no one could have come close to the, different places, different times, and haven't heard it quite some time, but I guess the morning before last, I heard the knocks, and I knew it was a spirit knock because the dogs didn't go nuts.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, there was about 3 minutes after I got up, there was an important phone call that came, and that I really needed to take. It was somebody that needed some assistance, wanted to know about a product that my wife's taking to help out her diabetes. And it never ceases to amaze me how Spirit will run your, it'll help you run your life if you listen.
Yes, if you provide a portal for it, and usually that's in a ceremony or a ritual that sets your intention. And it's absolutely available, and it doesn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just our attention.
That's right. That's what we keep telling people, is we want to enable them to know when to get out of the way of things, so that they don't get caught up in them. And we want people to be a do-it-yourself prophet. You know, Moses said, hey, this is okay. You know, when people came complaining to him in the camp of Israel, you know, oh, Moses, there's people running around prophesying. You know, what are you going to do? And his reply was, well, basically, well, so what? You know, I would that everybody could be a prophet. So
mm-hmm.
It's a very basic something that that everybody can tap into and get protection from, and help to run your life. Is that gift of knowing what Creator wants you to do, and but you got to surrender. You know, that's the tough part, is if you don't continue to surrender, that's what John Red Hat kept saying before he died. You know, he said our job is to surrender. You know, we come here with free will, and you know, it could be a big party. He says, and our job is to learn how to surrender.
Well, you know, its spirit is there. I mean, it really is there. And but it only comes in the surrender. But it's an interesting dichotomy in that you are responsible and yet you surrender. You don't give over your responsibility to right action, but there is a place. To me, I'm trying to find the words for it, and it's I don't know, it's a surrender to core truth. The Brazilians have a wonderful term. that mean something to me. It's that they let spirit ride them.
Mm.
And we don't have to be long meditators in the perfect diet and having, come to a place of great spiritual evolvement. It's just the wherever you are, it will meet you there. However low, high, whatever, just to, I find the breath, conscious breathing, is a really quick way to that core point, that place of peace.
Yeah, that's one of the first things Spirit told me was remember the sacred breath.
Mm-hmm. Yahweh is not a word for God that's not to be spoken. It's to be breathed, like the aloha, the namaste. It is in this body we breathe from our first breath as we come out of the mother's womb to our last breath as we shed the old overcoat and leave it behind us.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year's supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
Well, you're in a very cultural rich environment out there in California. There's a lot of things going on.
Lots happening.
Yeah,
just oodles.
I get email from a lot of different directions, and there's one conference. It's called What the Bleep Do We Know?
Oh, yeah.
It's
a movie, too.
Well, that's how I found out about Maria Yasbrew. And she's a mixed blood Apache, lives down in San Diego. Started interviewing her a couple of weeks ago. She's really busy, so it's hard to get an appointment with her. And my telephone network went down, so I got about 15 minutes. But we'll have her on again sometime soon.
Oh, I hope so.
And,
women have a lot to say right now.
Oh,
you know, the Bioneers Conference is coming up in about 2 weeks.
Hmm.
And that's very important. And I tell people to check the website for the Bioneers Conference.
Well, you're about, halfway in between L.A. and the Bay Area?
Oh, I'm north of the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, people are being incredibly creative. You know, this is the time to do it. If you ever had a vision, a dream, as Goethe said, the universe loves boldness. Whatever you can dream, you can begin it, and the universe will rise to meet you. It is really true at this time. This is not a time to stand still. And sometimes we may not know the whole picture and what we're supposed to be doing, but we've got a feeling, an inkling. Well, I say, say your prayers, light some sage or some sweet grass and some cedar and some kapal, some frankincense, whatever gets you, and just do it. Just begin. And not to use the word struggle. I'm told we're supposed to expulse the word struggle from our vocabulary and our mindset. And do whatever you have to do in a sense of celebration. It's all about your attitude. And just begin it. And everything will come from that. Just begin it. This is not a time to be standing still, you know. Have your rituals, say your prayers, and ask to be used in a good way, and move forward. We're a nation of sacred souls. There's tons of us out there, tons of us, and it's happening all over the earth right now. There is a invitation to consciousness and right action, and this is the time. When the elders called me back to Hopi in 93 and they said, Chakosh, you've been telling the people this is the 11th hour. Well, now you must go back and tell them it is the hour and there are things to be considered. And not to do it in a sense of fear. There is no death. There is just life. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. You know.
Yep.
Say your prayers.
Your good advice.
Do it. Just do it.
Yep.
I'm not so sure I have much more to say about that, but it sure is good talking to you, nephew.
Well, we sure appreciate you. Yeah, interesting. Spirit just told me the interview's over, and then you said it was over. I know who's running this show tonight.
Yeah, Spirit really is there. You know, it really does exist. And we just have to, when people say, oh, that was wonderful, your story, so da-da-da-da-da-da, and they, how do you do this? Oh, I could never do that. And I said, look, my job is to just show up and then find a way to get out of the way.
Well, I was getting ready to think, oh, this is over. Well, how am I going to suggest to her we end the interview? And then she ends the interview.
We work for the same spirit.
And here you're worried. When we started, you know, that you were kind of distracted and you wondered how this was going to go tonight. And so I guess the Carlos Nakai and the candles and whatever else you've been burning in there.
And I kept breathing.
Yep.
We're such vessels of miracles. We are capable of so much if we just stay clean and show up. It's just so important for people to stay away from these drugs that our government is actually making so available and wants us to saturate ourselves with. And of course they want, you know, people who are comatose. But we've got everything that we need in the vessels we were born with. And now is the time.
Have you got a little winged friend in there at your house?
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, my bird here has, his name is Huckabrat. And he just starts going. He does this little two-step kind of a rumba.
What is he?
He's a cockatiel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, didn't sound like a budgie.
No, he's got a million different sounds. He's not very sociable, but he's having a good time right now.
Well, we'll let you go pay some attention to him and give him a kiss for us.
Yeah, and I've got a new kitty that just came up and took his place in my lap, purring away. You know, grow your garden, know where your water is. Speak your truth, be good to each other, and we don't need a leader, you know, we're sacred spirits.
That's certainly true. Well, thanks so much, Auntie.
Love on you, Blue Otter, and blessings to all of you. We're here now, let's do it.
And folks, I want to be sure and visit her website and the links on the page you're listening from. Let her know how you feel. Love to hear from you. Well, this has been October 1st edition of 2005 of Prophecy Keepers Radio. And we'll see everybody again next week. Aho. Good night, and help.